This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Muito obrigado and boa noite, Felipe Massa.
Thank you and goodbye, Felipe Massa.
Ooh, close. Good night. Yeah, thank you and good night.
Good night. Give the wheel to your son, Felipe. He's the new Massa. If there's anything we know about Brazilian prodigies, it's that there will be a surnamed... the same surname will reappear, and it will be the spawn of the previous driver. They're like it's like Pokemon, so they evolve.
Is he a junior? Is he Felipe Massa Jr.?
Who the older one or?
Oh,
Felipe Massa's son,
two, isn't there? Yeah,
I don't think his name is Felipe. Is it?
Huh? I don't know.
Is it Felipe Massa's son?
We saw him do a mock pit change with Pastor Maldonado that one time. So.
We saw him beat Daniel Ricciardo and some crazy cards.
That's right.
As well. His son is called Filipinho. Filipino, oh. Which is like Felipe, probably. That's probably Felipe's name, right?
Filipino.
I'm trying not to say Filipino, but that's what if I was to say it phonetically, Drew, it says Filipino. So I don't know what the fuck to tell you. I'm sure his name isn't Filipino because he's Brazilian.
This is Shift F1. A podcast about speedy race cars. I'm Drew Scanlon.
I'm Daniel O'Spaniel.
And this is Brazil. Second to last race in Brazil. So we got one more to go.
The penultimate.
The ultimate pen.
Yeah, and what, you know, perfect timing that you were there when the race was on, Drew. Amazing. You went over to Brazil for 3 weeks.
I can really pick them, huh?
Ah, whatever. You missed that. How close were you to Interlagos? Did you ever get down to Sao Paulo?
I did, yes, but Sao Paulo is enormous.
Oh, okay.
I think it is the 12th largest city on Earth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like Coruscant. It's humongous.
I was just in Amsterdam this weekend, which is actually incredibly small, so I'm going to look up what Sao Paulo was. 12 million. Oh, my God. That's three times the size of Ireland. Amsterdam is a population of... I think it was only 800,000.
Oh, so it's like San Francisco.
Yeah, actually, that's true. And it's probably, I don't know, size-wise, it's not very dense at all. It's a fucking really weird... I guess that it's just one of these old cities that they're really not allowed to build above three stories anywhere. So it's like fairly flat.
Keeps them looking nice. No Salesforce.
No, there's no fucking Salesforce tower in the middle of Amsterdam ruining the skyline. I had a dream last night that I was in Oakland. I think I was crossing the Bay Bridge, and then I woke up and I was in this like house in the woods in Maryland, and it freaked me the fuck out. I was like, where am I? What's going on? Why can't I hear the highway? It happened when I was in Amsterdam as well. I kept waking up and not having a clue where I was. I need a couple of months living somewhere without travel to just like settle my brain's like locational screensaver so it knows where I am. You probably feel the same way going off to spending so much of your year abroad. You spent so much longer as well. You spent like, I was in Amsterdam for like 4 days. You were like, it took you so long to record all that
stuff. Yeah, I was in like 4 days per city in Brazil.
Oh my God. Yeah. Fair play. That's why it's good to come home and watch some goddamn race cars.
Word, Danny.
Even if the series is over.
You're home. You're... Yeah.
Season.
Technically, I mean, yeah, but I don't know. This race was pretty good. I got high hopes for Abu Dhabi. I've got a lot more hopes for next year. I'm really excited about what F1's going to look like next year.
Yeah, another little bit of a shift around. Yeah, I mean, the only fight that I can really see going on is the Renault Haas thing, because they're within, well, I don't know what they were within before the race, but they're within several points, shall we say, of each other. But apart from
Antar
that,
Rosso.
And Toro Rosso. Yeah, I guess they're
6 points separate Toro Rosso, Renault, and Haas.
Jeez Louise. Yeah. Yeah. So anything can happen.
Anything can happen, including being robbed at gunpoint. apparently, this happened 5 times over the race weekend in San Paolo.
Wow.
According to the Guardian, there were 5 incidents over the weekend involving gunpoint robbery. Mercedes mechanics in a minibus had valuables stolen by armed thieves on Friday, including their passports.
Oh, that sucks. And
FIA officials and Williams staff also suffered attempted robberies during the same evening. On Saturday, Sauber crew were the victims, and on Sunday, Pirelli staff.
Jeez. I mean, it's not like this is totally alien. Jenson Button was in like a car, an armed attack while he was in his car about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah, here.
Driving away from the circuit. So like, it's fucking
nuts. Yeah, the FIA actually issued a statement as a result saying, in order to minimize risk, we would strongly advise that you remove car park passes when exiting the circuit and only reapply them when close to the circuit entry gate. It is also advisable to remove paddock passes and, if possible, to change any clothing with outlet-oriented branding, such as TV networks, before exiting the circuit.
Right.
And presumably, you know, race teams.
Right. I mean, the circuit is essentially, you know, adjacent to favela on, I think, 3 sides, maybe all sides, I don't know, but certainly 3 sides. So that's like, you know, that's the upper class and the lower class rubbing shoulders right there, and then mix in the fact that they're not locals, and then it's a pretty good.
And if you're situation. Wearing some kind of branded shirt, right. You're just a beacon.
Yeah. You're like a soft touch. It's like candy on a piece of, you know, carrot on a stick for anyone who's looking to rob somebody. So, I mean, you know, fucking glad nobody got hurt at the end of the day. You know,
yes.
Stuff gets stolen. That's the way it is. But at least nobody got hurt. Hopefully everyone got away without too much mental scarring as well.
Yeah.
How did you feel when you were there? How did you feel? Like, is it the sort of thing where when you're in a foreign country, you're just a little bit like wary anyway? Because the one thing about an F1 race I can see is like all these people when they're in the circuit are with their friends and with people, their colleagues, and maybe they let their guard down. But what was it like for you when you were there?
I was on my guard, but I think I was especially on my guard because everyone, including Brazilians, told me before I went there that, hey, you should really be on the lookout,
right?
And try to minimize looking like a target as much as possible.
Right.
So like, don't flash your camera around, don't flash your phone around, that kind of stuff. Nothing ever happened to me, or Joey, my camera guy.
Good.
Who was with me the whole time. And he, not the whole time, but, for 2 of the cities, he also has very broad shoulders.
Yeah. He's a big dude.
No one was going to mess with him.
That's
but
true. You're a tall dude. But that is scary, especially when you're filming stuff. Because, like, hey, guess what? When you're filming stuff, you need to have a camera out.
Yeah. So we, you know, when I went to Ukraine, I felt much more free to shoot out in public. You know,
right.
Oh, I'm walking around this area. I'm walking around over here. We didn't do any of that in Brazil without Brazilians escorting us. There was one point where we were shooting in São Paulo, actually. In like this, they call it a gray market.
Okay.
and there were a lot of people around, and one big Brazilian dude stood behind Joey the whole time.
Wow.
With our group, right. to make sure that nobody messed with him and everything was okay.
Just punching his fist into his palm over and over
right.
again, like 5 second intervals.
Yeah.
Jeez. Well, glad to hear it.
Yeah, but speaking of being robbed, Hamilton crashes out in Q1.
Sure does. He crashes out. Okay, he crashes out in Q1. He crashes out in Q1.
Doesn't even set a time.
He crashes out, I think, I'm going to count them. 1, 2, 3, then a straight, 4. I think on the 5th turn, he crashes.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't like a bit of rain, bit of wet on the track. He just, I don't know, the back just dumped out on him. Like, it was almost like an aquaplane, but I don't think there's enough water for it to be aquaplaning. But he just went and flew out into a part of the track that actually has a half decent amount of runoff, but didn't matter. Straight into the wall. That was the end of his qualifying.
Yeah. yeah, just it's, you know, you don't see that a lot from Hamilton, just losing it.
No, you don't see people like either also totaling their cars in qualification all that often. Like, you'll see people fuck them up every now and again, but like I think two of his wheels were broken. It was
he kind of shunted sideways straight into the wall.
Yeah, especially on an outlap. Like he wasn't going out to, he wasn't setting a time. I don't think. I think he literally pulled out of the pits when it happened.
Oh really? You don't think it was on a hot lap?
I don't think it was. Maybe I'm wrong. But when I was watching it, I didn't catch qualifying live. I watched it as part of the main race when they went back to show everything. And it looked to be that way, so maybe I'm wrong, but yeah, just crazy. I mean, immediately there you go, starting from the pits, like that's just the way that goes. You don't set a time, you don't get to go.
Yeah, I actually did. I woke up Saturday morning and thought, oh, it's qualifying's on at like a reasonable time. I've missed a little bit of it, but I'll turn it on because I, you know, want to watch it live. And I turn it on, and it's the middle of Q2, and I don't see Hamilton's name. I'm like, oh man. The one time, like, right. Hamilton crashes in Q1.
And you miss it.
I miss it. Problems also, apparently, for Raikkonen when he's on the grid. Kind of scary, because we've seen that a lot.
Yeah.
Furious action around a Ferrari that then gets shuttled to the pit, but he soon gets into his car, and I guess it was just a weak telemetry signal that they were getting.
Yeah, it was weird. They had the panels off the side, and it looked like, oh, there's, like, something severe getting replaced here, but yeah, I guess they were just weren't. To be honest, the radio stuff at Interlagos is, or I guess we're calling it Autodrome, or how they call it, Apache now, a lot more now. I didn't see Interlagos mentioned once on any of the on any of the broadcasts, but it's always been a bit of a problem there. I think it has something to do with the fact that they're inside of a city with lots of signals, and also there's quite a heavy fall off. The track is very low at the bottom part, so that's always been an issue. So I think that they were maybe just prepping to make sure that they didn't have any problems with telemetry coming back. But yeah,
well, they had problems during the race with like what lap it was.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Actually, for the first couple of laps of the race, there was like, I think after the fifth lap, shall we say. Yeah, it disappeared for a while as well. It was weird.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Also before the race, Massa gets kissed from his wife for his final Brazilian Grand Prix.
This year.
This for now. interesting shot of Chase Carey talking to Bernie Eccleston, which I would love to be a fly on the wall for that conversation.
I'm not sure if I would. I bet it's really awkward. That's a really stinted, awkward conversation between an American billionaire and a Romanian vampire who has been running this company for the past 80 years.
And also a nice thank you from Massa over the radio before the race starts.
Nice. I don't think you did the rundown of Paul, of who's the grid yet.
I'm about to, Danny.
Oh, sorry.
Here it is. Bottas on top.
That's what happens.
Yeah, when Hamilton's not there. That's not fair. He's gotten it for real.
Yeah.
Vettel in second, narrowly pipped by Bottas on the last possible lap in qualifying. Raikkonen in third, followed by Verstappen and Perez rounding up the top five. Behind him, Fernando Alonso.
What?
Nico Hülkenberg, Carlos Sainz, Felipe Massa in ninth, and Ocon in 10th. Behind him, Grosjean, Van Dorn, Magnussen, Ricciardo with a 10-place power unit penalty.
Ouch.
Wehrlein in 15th, Stroll with 5-place penalty for a gearbox, Ericsson with a 5-place penalty for a gearbox, Hartley with 10 places for a power unit, Gasly for 25 places for a power unit, and jeez, Hamilton starting from the pit lane. I guess when you don't set a time in qualifying, you start from the back of the field, but since they were already starting from the back of the field, Mercedes opted to give him an entirely new engine, in so doing, because they worked, I think, outside of Parc Fermé, that meant they had to start from the pits.
The only other massive negative about that is that you don't get to heat up your tires like everyone else does on that lap.
Yeah, so you don't get a formation lap.
Yeah, so it's a big risk reward, I guess. I wonder why they did that for Hamilton, considering, I guess, did they not want him not finishing the last race of the season or something? Or it just seems weird. Like, I guess they don't want him not being competitive, but also, like, the championship's over, so why bother? Seems weird.
Yeah, I mean, they may have wanted to give him a good engine so that he could power through and not worry about wear, right. You know? Hmm. So that's the grid. You want to take us through the start, Danny?
Sure, why not? All eyes on Vettel and Bottas. The start of this race is always very interesting because it's not the longest straight in the world, and it immediately goes into a relatively tricky sort of a three-part turn where there's not all that much room, and also you can get it on the inside, lose it on the next one, and also win it back on the next one, and then it goes into a straight. So the whole situation at the start here isn't necessarily about who can get in first right away. It's kind of who can get best track position going down that straight. And then once they sort of, if they can get around, I guess what it is, turn four or five after the straight, then generally they've got a bit then of track to sort of make a bit of a gap. So all eyes on Vettel and Bottas there. Bottas actually had a better start of the two of them, but for whatever reason, in gearing up probably third to fourth or fourth to fifth, he stumbled a bit, and Vettel actually managed to bite back a bit of track. And by the time they get down to that first turn, Vettel has his entire car pass Bottas, or at least most of it, going around the turn, and then out of the turn is able to retain it. And then down the straight, you know, the straight line speed of the Mercedes is always a threat, but Vettel able to hold it off down there and essentially pips him for first going around the first lap. Bit of action around the back as well. Ricardo kind of spins out. Not really sure exactly what happens, but on replay, I think you can see it's Magnussen that squeezes out Stoffel Vandoorne, who got squeezed out actually going around the first turn as well, and did very well not to hit the Haas on the outside. I think it was Grosjean or someone.
He may have hit him.
He may have hit who?
Grosjean.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Beforehand.
In that first turn.
Oh, really? Okay.
If you watch the replay from the helicopter and Van Dorn's onboard,
yeah,
it looks like their tires get really, really close, and then Grosjean twitches.
Right.
So
okay.
It's tough to tell if there was contact, but it sure looks like it.
If there wasn't, it was miraculous, because that makes sense to me, because on the replay, I just thought it's ridiculous that Van Dorn actually managed to get out of that without getting hit. But sadly, yeah, I believe it was Magnussen to his right who pushed him, and then he pushed, who hit him, and then he hit into Ricciardo on the outside, who ended up taking a spill for his damage. That wasn't the only bit of contact we saw, and not the only bit of contact we saw from Romain Grosjean either, unfortunately, as around the fifth turn, himself and Esteban Ocon had a rather clumsy coming together.
Yeah, Ocon tries to go around the outside of Grosjean, and Grosjean loses grip in the turn and slides into Ocon, yeah, Taking both of them off the track.
Yeah, bit of a shame.
He tweeted after the race, Grosjean did, saying, I'm sorry for Esteban Ocon, but with a puncture from being hit into turn one, it's rather difficult to control the car.
Was that what it was? Is that what he was saying?
Yeah. So I after he said that, I went back and looked, and that's when I noticed the Van Dorn.
So his rear left then, presumably.
Yes.
Yeah, he did. He did wobble pretty wide. He did lose it on that turn, because that is like a fairly like open overtaking spot. That's probably the only major overtaking spot left on that track until you get up to the next straight, unless you want to dive into a corner. It's round the outside of that one. So it was a valid overtake for Ocon, and just a bit of a shame that happened. Interesting, then, that he said that it is because of his puncture, because the safety car was out before that had actually happened, I think, for the crash up at the first couple of turns. But they were investigating him then for an on-track incident with him and Ocon right afterwards. And I imagine if his car had been damaged, I wonder if that would have been the case. Maybe?
Right, because they gave him a 10-second penalty.
Yeah, he actually did get the penalty, and he wasn't very happy about it either. Ocon tried to get his car back as well, actually. But
he had two
punctures on the left side, I think it was. It wasn't going to make it work.
Yeah, actually, the second part of that tweet is, personally struggling to understand the penalty, though.
Right.
So it was really tough to see
right,
that he had a puncture, if indeed he did. But yeah, Gene, or not Gene Haas, Gunther Steiner was also really peeved.
Right.
after the race as well.
I mean, even watching it, I kind of felt like it was a bit of a racing incident, because it wasn't like Ocon was squeezing him, and it also wasn't like, and I'm not a big massive Grosjean defender, I think he complains too much and does get into accidents a lot, but there was nothing he was really doing wrong necessarily. He was probably pushing a little bit harder just to retain position, and he just lost the car. Like, it wasn't like he turned in or that he was pushing him out. The car just went. So regardless of whether it was a puncture or not, I thought that maybe it was a bit harsh.
Yeah, like, but what are you supposed to do? Just back off and let him take the
right?
I don't know.
Exactly. If you're getting overtaken, that means you're pushing up against the limit of grip to try and retain that spot. Like, exactly. You don't want to be sending the message to drivers that they just fold if somebody's trying to overtake them.
But that safety car was deployed for Van Dorn, I think, who had gone off the track after that contact.
Right.
Ricardo gets back to the pits with no apparent damage and puts on soft tires. But Van Dorn, Ocon, and Magnussen are all out of the race. And this is pretty good for Hamilton, who is already up in 14th place.
Right.
Because he's gonna get another restart
and a safety car. Yeah, bunching them all up for him.
Yeah.
Also, that's Gasly, warm up his laps, warm up his tires for a little couple of laps.
Yeah, there you go. He finally has a chance to do that. Gasly and Hartley are up to 10th and 12th from 19th and 18th.
Wow. Fair play.
Yeah.
Where they would have qualified basically if had they not taken the penalties.
Yeah, pretty much. Massa also had a killer start from 9th and now 6th, sits in 6th behind Alonso ahead of Perez.
Yeah, teammates once, teammates no more.
That's right. Pretty clean getaway on the restart on lap 5 for the top 4, but Alonso loses a spot to Massa.
Yeah, right away on the straight. Caught napping a little bit. Bottas tried to get the gap on Vettel, and it wasn't quite a Hamilton getaway, but Vettel did well to get that gap out.
Hamilton, though, did get one more immediately for 13th and then jumped Hartley for 12th in the very spot he spun off in Q1.
Right.
He then gets strolled in the next lap, picking everybody off with ease at a rate of about one car per lap.
Right.
And gets into the points about 5 laps later.
Yeah, it's amazing. So, I think by lap 11 he was into 9th past Carlos Sainz Jr.
It's an overtaking show, as we thought it would be, you know. This is always fun when this happens. Ricardo also jumping people, got by Hartley on lap 9 for 14th place.
Yeah. And then past Stroll, I believe, on lap 11 into
13th place. Which is an amazing move. It's at turn 1 and he breaks from all the way back in Rio.
It's amazing.
To get on the inside of that. He locks it up, but it's a great move. And picks off Ericsson a few turns later, actually.
It's amazing. He has this ability to lock up wheels without having them totally fucked. Like, he locks it up, and where everyone else is like a massive flat spot or a huge plume of rubber smoke puffed up into the air, he just seems to do it in a way that's like, you know when you're playing like Gran Turismo on easy and it just lets you e-brake into every corner? It's like that. It's amazing. He's something else.
Yeah. Back at the front, Vettel is 1.8 seconds ahead of Bottas, who has dropped back a little bit. This is lap 12.
Yeah.
Lap 14, a great move by Hamilton to get by Perez. Perez moves to the inside of turn 1 to cover it, but Hamilton reads that move perfectly and goes to the outside without losing any momentum. Setting up the inside of turn 1 for the pass into 7th.
7th place, so that means Perez at 8th now, and he qualified, was it 5th, I think? 6th?
5th. 5th, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
Lap 15, Ricardo picks off Sainz for 10th at turn 1, and then does the same move on Hülkenberg on lap 19 for 9th. So, also, two cars rocketing up the field. Lap 20, Massa is kind of holding up Alonso now. Hamilton pounces at turn 1 and gets Alonso into 6th place. And then Massa a lap later for 5th. So from 20th to 5th in 21 laps, and is now only 17 seconds off the lead, which sounds like a lot for anyone but Lewis Hamilton.
Right. He started on the softs with everyone else, did he?
He started on softs while everyone else was on super softs.
Super softs, right, sorry.
Around this time, Bottas is told to close the gap to Vettel, However, it is a 22-second pit stop delta, which would drop him right into the middle of that Massa Alonso Perez battle, which would slow him down and allow Vettel to get away. So they stay put for a while.
For a while.
Yeah.
But not too long. It was interesting. This whole section, this whole area or part of time was kind of like wondering when about that swap to soft is going to happen. And when it did, I think it caught everyone by surprise.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're trying to do a one stop. And this is around, I think this is when the lap counter goes out, but it's around like mid 20s. And this is a 71 lap race. So that soft tire is going to have to last you a while. Hamilton though, setting fastest laps on that soft tire. So podium definitely not out of the question. But yes, lap 28 is when Mercedes calls Bottas in to try the undercut on Vettel. And if you're listening and kind of unclear, or you ever watched the race and kind of unclear what the undercut is, in other words, Mercedes thinks that Bottas will come out in clear air and do laps that are way faster than what Vettel's doing, so that when Vettel comes in, Bottas has already made up time on him, meaning that Vettel would come out of the pits behind Bottas. So he comes in and tries to do that, goes onto the soft tires with a 2.7-second stop. So Vettel pretty much has to pit here to minimize the damage that Bottas will do on his new tires.
Yeah, essentially Bottas has like made the decision for everyone else by doing this.
So Vettel does indeed come in on the next lap. He also goes onto soft tires and does a 2.1-second stop. And they're pretty much neck and neck as Vettel exits the pits, but Vettel does come out ahead. His previous lead of 1.5 seconds is gone, however, and Bottas is right on him.
Right on his tail. And I think I'm call me crazy, but I think Interlagos may be the best circuit for watching an undercut happen. It's so satisfying because the way in which the exit of the pit road comes out alongside the little, you know, S's at the end of the start finish straight is amazing. Like you have this one shot of, you know, the two cars at totally different paces, but like almost side by side, weaving their way through like slaloms almost, and then pushing their way up the straight. I absolutely love it. I was like, I was looking forward to it the minute Bottas pit. I was like, oh, this is going to be great.
Yeah, it's really dramatic, and it's really great for illustrating what's going on.
For sure, right. Yeah.
But yeah, the rest of the dominoes fall, and everyone else pits except for Hamilton, because he's on those soft tires, so he inherits the lead.
I will say, before we go on, the only one that may be as good or better, it's hard to tell, is actually Abu Dhabi, because you can't even see the pit lane exit by the time that you're just kind of guessing when they're going to come out. It's like the total opposite end of that.
That's the one with the tunnel, right?
Yes, the one that it goes underneath the star finish straight right before the turn. So you kind of lose them, and then you see them pop up. And also, the speed at which the other cars are carrying through that second turn is actually quite a lot going down. So, or going up the hill. So it's kind of ridiculous. They just kind of pop out of nowhere. It's amazing.
Hamilton is in the lead, but by lap 32, Vettel appears to be pulling away and is already 2 seconds up on Bottas. lap 41, I guess, is my next note.
I'm with you, man. I went from 29. I had Wehrlein almost getting past Sainz and 38, and then nothing till 41. There was a couple of sizable chunks of not really much is going on here in this race.
Yeah, this and my note here is Stroll trying to pull over Cardo.
Basically, on Grosjean?
On Grosjean.
Yeah, it was awesome.
He breaks way late on the inside of Grosjean. It doesn't quite work, and Grosjean retakes the position, but I like what you're going for, Stroll.
Yeah, it was good. It was he tried to bite off a little bit more than he could chew, but full marks for effort, I think, on that one. It was awesome.
Yeah, one lap later, though... Hartley retires, unfortunately. Toro Rosso not doing so hot with that Renault engine, I guess. They have scored 1 point in the last three races, and that came from Danica Fiat.
Right. Imagine that.
Lap 44. Number 44, pits from first place.
Nice.
Hamilton's obviously lost a lot of time on those old soft tires, but he has to make it make the super softs last to the end of the race, which is 27 laps away. But while everyone else had come in around that time, he's got a lighter car.
Mm.
So he was doing great on the softs. So who can say right. how fast he'll go on these super softs? It's a 2.7 second stop. He rejoins in fifth behind Verstappen and ahead of Massa. And according to his engineer, podium still possible.
Mm.
Lap 46, Stroll finally does get by Grosjean on the outside of turn one for 13th place. Lap 58, another big jump here. Hamilton now in DRS range two for Verstappen.
Yeah.
And on the next lap, Hamilton tries it at turn one, but Verstappen covers it well, making Hamilton move to the outside and keeping the position for Verstappen. But a few corners later in the second DRS zone, Hamilton slingshots by. Verstappen tries to cover it, but yeah. he's just got too much momentum.
He fought as much as he could, but ultimately he's fighting a very fast on straight Mercedes powertrain, so not much you can do about it.
Who started from the pit lane.
Right, yeah, I know.
From ridiculous. 20th position, he's now in 4th place. 4 seconds to Raikkonen with
maybe
11
laps to go. Maybe
give
Mercedes a Honda engine next year.
Yeah, I'd be all right with that.
Dude, there we go.
Homologation. Lap 63, Verstappen complaining of poor handling, requests to pit because he's far enough ahead of the next guy in line, which is Ricciardo. This request is initially denied, but then granted. Pit stops are dangerous. Like, anything can go wrong. You could get, you could lose time with some snafu with the tires. But undrivable cars, also very, very dangerous. Although, the commentators pointed out that Verstappen gets a bonus, a cash bonus, for the fastest lap.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's so funny. No wonder he was doing that a couple of races back.
Yeah. So, ulterior motives all over the place. He does end up coming in for a pit. They do grant that request. Bottas' engineer on lap 63 says to attack. He's 2 seconds to Vettel. Hamilton does catch up to Raikkonen at lap 67 with 4 laps to go. Tries it at turn one and locks up big time, losing a lot of momentum, rather, and never really recovers.
Mm.
Stroll gets some tire fiber flapping around as a result of all his lockups and has to pit. As I mentioned, Hamilton in the last few laps gets close to Raikkonen but just can't get it up onto the podium. And Vettel wins the Brazilian Grand Prix with Raikkonen in third, his teammate, and Bottas in second, Hamilton in fourth.
Yeah.
And behind that, there's still a hot battle happening with Massa and Alonso.
I know,
which
right?
Which has kind of been building the whole race. Alonso's like, let me at him.
Yeah. He's like, I don't care about Perez's times. Tell me my gaps to Massa every single lap.
Right.
Fucking hell.
And it came down to the wire. Massa, though, keeps it ahead for seventh place, but it was a thrilling finish. Perez actually almost pipped Alonso at the end, but it ended Verstappen in fifth, Ricciardo in sixth, Massa, Alonso, Perez.
Nice work, Felipe Massa. No team orders that time. No Alonso pass that time. Beautiful.
Yeah, I think the commentator actually said, Felipe is faster than you.
Awesome.
Which is, a deep cut. Post-race notes I have here. Hamilton sulking in his car for a while. Not in the top three cars. Although he was just sitting there doing nothing. He may also have just been exhausted. I mean,
it is very hot there. I forget who. I think it was Verstappen in qualification was complaining. He says, my bum is very hot or something.
Yeah. Alonso standing by his car at the pit entry applauding as Massa drives in, which I thought was classy.
Oh, that's cool.
Big cheers from the crowd as Massa exits his car. And baby Massa on the radio. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Cutest kid.
I will support you wherever you go.
Yeah. Including Formula E.
Right.
Not the most talkative green room.
No, I actually turned off. I didn't watch any of that.
Yeah, no, you didn't. It didn't miss much. You did miss Brazilian champagne music, though.
Okay.
Instead of the I don't know what overture it is that they usually play, but it was just like samba music.
Oh, really? Just like lots of like whistles going off and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. I like it.
And Massa did come out onto the podium to give a curtain call with Rubens Barrichello. Lots of Portuguese.
That's lovely. Who did the interviews? Was it Rubens?
Rubens, yeah. Oh, well, for Massa. For the drivers, it was the dude with the pink jacket.
Eddie
I don't
Jordan?
Know who he is. No. Almost as annoying.
No one on planet Earth is almost as annoying as Eddie Jordan, Drew.
I guess you're right.
He's in a league of his own.
a lot of Senna chanting, but when Felipe Massa got on the podium with his kid, it changed to Felipe, which was cool.
That's nice.
Also, according to F1Fanatic.co.uk, this is 21 consecutive podiums for Raikkonen without a win, which extends the most all-time by 5.
That's amazing.
Yeah, second place is Jean Alesi.
I mean, he wouldn't even be there if it wasn't for Hamilton crashing out, really.
But I guess you're right.
Interesting. It's been a while since we've seen him up there a lot recently as well. I mean, this year, I guess, just in general.
Yeah.
It is. I'm not surprised the green room wasn't particularly chatty. You've got somebody who didn't win the world championship but could have, and two Finns.
Right.
Apologies to all our Finnish listeners.
But they get it. The rest of the result I have here, as we mentioned, I think I listed up through Perez in 9th, Hülkenberg 10th, Sainz, Gasly, Ericsson, Wehrlein, Grosjean, and Stroll. Hartley, right. Ocon, Van Dorn, and Magnussen are
So who's the last?
DNFs.
Who are the top 10? Was there a Toro Rosso, Renault, or Haas in the top 10?
Hülkenberg,
okay. So that was the only little bit. And he was what, 10th?
Yes, so it's Ferrari, Mercedes, Renault with Verstappen, and then Ricciardo. Then Mercedes, Honda, Mercedes.
Oh, I mean not Renault. With the engines. I mean with just the teams.
Oh, just the teams? Yeah, it was just Hülkenberg.
So just with Renault then. So that's, how many points did he got? Was it 10th?
Yeah, it was 10th, okay. So he got 1 point.
1 point, so he pushed that gap up between him and them and Haas by 1 point. So 53 for Toro Rosso, yeah, 49 for Renault, and 47 for Haas, all going into that final race.
Driver of the day, Lewis Hamilton.
Unsurprising.
I mean, he passed a lot of people.
Rubber banding, man. He's playing that game on easy mode. What the fuck you think is going to happen?
50cc.
Yeah, right? Totally.
He is your champion, of course.
He continues to be.
345 points. Sebastian Vettel in second with 302. Valtteri Bottas,
how close?
280.
Oh,
still getting... possible.
Is it? 25.
Yeah, 25 points. So if Vettel goes out and Valtteri wins, he would win second place.
Wow.
By 3 points.
That'd be something else.
Yeah. Danny Ric is in fourth with 200 points. Kimi Raikkonen's got 193, so that's a close one, too.
Ooh.
Verstappen's got 158. Perez has 94. Ocon with 83. Sainz has 54. Felipe Massa with 42. Stroll's got 40. Hülkenberg with 35. Grosjean with 28. Magnussen, 19. Fernando Alonso, 15. Van Dorn, 13. Palmer, 8. Wehrlein and Kvyat, 5. Marcus Ericsson, Pierre Gasly, Brendan Hartley, Paul Di Resta, Jenson Button, Danny O'Dwyer, and Antonio Giovinazzi all have 0 points.
I feel like we've had the most drivers this year in like 10 years. Like just the amount of drivers. We've had returning drivers. We've had one-off drivers. We've had a bunch of people lose their seats. It's fucking weird. We've had swap team drivers.
I wonder if it's an effect of the longer season that these drivers are coming in the middle of the season now.
Maybe. It's a funny one.
I don't know.
We've had so many.
Yeah. Constructors, Mercedes.
We've had 25, including Di Resta and Button.
Right.
Which is quite a lot. If I go to 2016, we had 21. Oh, no, sorry. We had... we had 24, actually.
Hmm, okay.
There you go. Maybe I'm mixing it up. Van Dorn had that one race, and Rio Haryanto, although he has come back to drive for Toro Rosso, so...
That's right. In only his three-letter name.
Yeah.
Mercedes, of course, has won the Constructors' Championship with 625 points. Ferrari's in second with 495. Red Bull's got 358. Force India with 177. Williams has 82.
Well done,
Toro
Force India.
Rosso.
Amazing.
Yeah, no kidding. Mm. Number fourth place. Toro Rosso's got 53. Renault's got 49. Haas has 47.
Super
McLaren
close.
With 28. And Sauber with 5.
5. The only way is up. Baby. Score more points next race.
Speaking of the closeness of Renault and Toro Rosso, we've got some great back and forth happening in the press. This is from motorsport.com. Renault Sport F1 boss Cyril Abiteboul said, We do have a little bit of concern about the way our engine is operated in the Toro Rosso car.
Ooh.
Adding that there are never coincidences in this sport. Sick burn. But Toro Rosso's got their own sick burn to respond with. In a statement released on Friday, Scuderia Toro Rosso said, "We mustn't forget that they are fighting with Toro Rosso for a better position in the Constructors' Championship. As suggested by Mr. Abiteboul, the situation may not be a coincidence, but is certainly not due to Scuderia Toro Rosso's car."
Mm.
Implying, of course, that Renault is, I don't know, has a vested interest in Toro Rosso not doing well?
Da, da, da.
My tinfoil hat is secure.
Mm. Things like this never
also,
happen
in F1. In other news, Pirelli has announced a even softer tire for 2018. Are you aware of this?
Even softer. It's made. It's just wet cake. What's going on?
It's pink.
Super, super, super soft.
They
Ultra
haven't decided
soft.
On the name yet. They
Ripped
are
for your
having
pleasure.
Everyone vote on three names. Are you
Ross?
Ready?
Okay. Okay.
Mega soft.
Oh, fuck. I'm voting for that one. That's clearly the best, but keep going.
Hyper soft.
That's actually strong as well.
Or extreme soft.
No, definitely not extreme soft. That's like, that sounds like an oxymoron. You can't, it can't. Soft cannot be extreme. Soft can definitely be mega or hyper.
Mega.
I think they should combine the two. They should go mega hyper soft.
Super mega hyper soft?
Although then it starts to sound like a software company.
Hyper soft?
So
yeah,
super
right.
Hyper soft? It's like, yeah, it's a bit like...
What about
Flandcrest Enterprises? Soft. Interslice.
I don't understand why you can't... Like, I feel like... Going softer and softer and softer is a little bit like having 11 on your dial. Why don't you just make a super hard?
Right, yeah, at a certain stage.
And just shift everybody.
Yeah, like at a certain stage, what was once soft it can no longer be considered soft because of all the other options that are around. Like, no point intended.
At this point, wouldn't super soft be medium?
Yeah, kind of, right? And what's hard? Do we have hard anymore?
Diamond. Just take the leagues from right. StarCraft.
Right. Hard is... Do you remember the Flintstones used to have those like rocks for their car, for their wheels?
Right. <That's>...
Actually, no. By this metric, hard is actually soft and medium is ultra soft and hyper mega, hyper life drifter soft is soft now. It's fucking bizarre. I mean, like it is, like as silly as it is, and we're being about this, if I came to the sport and there was like four types of soft tire, I would fucking walk away. Like that's the type of thing they need to like sort that out. That's like, I get it. The tires are soft because they're going fast and they are hot and all. That's the way they work. But like, just for the sake of everyone, please differentiate them a little bit better.
Yeah. I'd be in for Monster Soft.
Monster Soft is also good. Microsoft.
Yes, it's smaller tires. Call them Microsoft.
Yeah, when we do when we have the big front wheels or the small front wheels, big back wheels thing, we'll do again. That right. Resurgence will happen. Then we can have the Microsoft wheels. Oh my god!
Continuing on, Alonso reportedly is in for the 24 hours of Le Mans.
Okay.
He is issuing a no comment, but that's word from the BBC, so y'all know it's true.
Yeah. He's got to get his rocks off somewhere.
Yes. Well, he'll be racing January in the IMSA WeatherTech Championship Rolex 24 at Daytona.
Ooh.
Saturday, January 27th and Sunday. So yeah, getting some time in the endurance cars. And moving on to the continuing story on the 2021 engines, Ferrari, as we mentioned, threatening to quit Formula One, surprise to no one. But Chase Carey has responded to that, and in so doing, I think characterizes Formula One, or he puts into words, I think, what matters about Formula One quite well. So this from motorsport.com. Ferrari president Sergio Marchionne last week complained about the increased focus on standardization in the planned rules, claiming his team could pull out of F1 and saying, "I don't want to play NASCAR globally." Carey is adamant that Liberty still wants differentiation between competing engines and cars, but with closer competition. Quote, "Actually, I don't think we have a differing view to Ferrari. I'm not trying to be derogatory to NASCAR, but we don't plan to be NASCAR either. We don't want to standardize the cars. We don't want 20 identical cars going around the track, and the only difference is the driver. F1 is unique, and it marries up competitive sport to state-of-the-art technology. We want the teams to have the ability to do what they do to create cars that are unique to them, unique engines to them, unique bodies to them. But we want to make success dependent on how well you spend your resources within some constraints versus how much you spend. And I think that's a healthier sport. And then those that can develop the technologies, develop the capabilities that are better than others, will enable them to succeed."
Yeah, that's about as like pragmatic a response you can give to that, which is like probably not what Ferrari are expecting, because what they usually do is they throw all their toys out of the pram, and then Bernie Ecclestone comes, you know, it's that type of like that type of wheeling and dealing that we've previously seen in F1 negotiations. I'm totally with Kerry on this. Like, I'm not a massive Ferrari fan at the best of days anyway, but I think what the sport needs more than anything else is all those legacy deals, which clearly benefit those top teams, like clearly benefit those teams and keep them up there, and are to the detriment of new teams, which is the most important thing to F1. And the thing that has revitalized F1 over the past 20 years has been new fucking teams. Red Bull, Force India, like having other teams fall out because of their financial problems and having other people come in and get scooped them up. Like, you need to incentivize that. And ultimately, people who watch the sport want competition. Ferrari fans mightn't want competition. They might want Ferrari to win all the time. But, like, I think the days are over of, like, Ferrari being able to throw their weight around like that and get what they want. And ultimately, I think right now, an F1 without Ferrari would be better than an F1 without competition. They're not the powerhouse they once were. There are other teams that have large fan bases. The Tifosi are massive, but if you look at, like, I don't know, anecdotally, if I was to look at my like F1 fans now as opposed to in the 90s, there'd be far more of a spread of fans across teams than there would have been that sort of glory hunting Ferrari thing that you got with a lot of European fans. So I kind of feel like this is a moment for the new organization to really like put a mark in the sand and say, no, we are going to do this for the betterment of the sport. And if that pisses off some people who are going to earn a lot of money out of it, then that's so be it. Like, so I'm totally with Chase Carey on this, and I hope Ferrari, for the sake of the sport, just shut the fuck up.
Yeah, well said. I think it's worth pointing out that Ferrari is a publicly traded company, and their stock price fell after Marchionne said that.
Right.
That they were thinking about leaving F1.
I mean, like, the other aspect of this is that, like, yes, this stuff is really expensive, but like, Ferrari is one of the brands in this that needs F1 more than a lot of the other ones. Like, Red Bull don't. I'm sure there's some sort of marketing push for them, but like, for F1 is a very, like, I don't know what the word is, but it's advertising at a very like top level. Like, the types of advertising you get with F1 and the reach that it has and the demographics that it hits is
the cachet that it brings.
Totally. And it's that's why you've got Rolex and stuff being advertised on it as opposed to like Bud Light. Like, I'm sure it's not, you know, I'm sure the demographic isn't just wealthy people, but like it's certainly middle class and upwards generally, at least in the Western world, right? So like there aren't many sports that Ferrari can do that in. Like F1 is kind of the only one, and there's other people like Aston Martin we know who want to get involved in the sport as well. So
yeah, they're competitors.
Totally. So like I think it benefits. An F1 for a Ferrari is probably more damaging to Ferrari than it is to F1 at this stage.
Yeah, agreed, wholeheartedly. And this is why I'm excited for next year, just to see how all this shakes out. We've still got a few things up in the air. We don't have a Williams driver yet, replacing Felipe Massa.
Right.
Word is that Kubica is going to do some more testing.
Although who knows? Maybe Felipe Massa will get that seat.
Could be. Could be. But speaking of demographics all around the world, Danny.
Oh my God, it's time to race around the world.
Indeed it is. World Rally Championship is in Coffs Harbour, New South Wales, Australia. Danny's allergic to Australians.
Coffs Harbour?
Yes.
Coffs Harbour or Coffs Harbour?
Coffs Harbour, you know, you got it.
Yeah, that'll be it.
For the Kennards Hire Rally Australia.
Ooh.
Gambin World Truck. They're at Homestead Miami Speedway in Homestead, Florida, the United States, for the Ford EcoBoost 200. The World Endurance Championship is at the Bahrain International Circuit in Sakhir, Bahrain, for the 6 hours of Bahrain. The World Touring Cross Championship is in Macau.
Ooh.
For their Macau race. And Danny.
Yes, Drew.
I forgot to look up what the NASCAR race is called. But NASCAR's,
you know where NASCAR is? It's in the heart. It's in the beating heart of every American, Drew.
It is, but most especially in Homestead Miami Speedway.
Oh, it's also at the Homestead Miami Speedway. Okay.
Yeah, with their friends, the trucks, for the Ford EcoBoost 400.
It's okay. It's like the previous one, but 200 more laps.
Right, yeah.
Okay, EcoBoost. That's, yep, Ford Eco. Cars are good for the environment. Ford EcoBoost. Let's boost the economy.
We need more EcoBoost cars.
Right.
Replacing trees.
We need more cars. Make American cars in America. also make Japanese cars in America.
You picked some emails. Should we get to those? You can email us at f1.cool/emails.
That's how emails get done. You fill the format. That's how it works.
That's emails. Right. This one from Joe and Sarah Pop. Who met us last year at the Austin meetup.
Oh, yeah.
Along with their dad. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. That was fun. They're good peoples.
Sorry we couldn't make it. Both of them. Year. What's that? Yeah.
Sorry we couldn't make it this year. Yeah.
Both of them write in to say, Drew and Danny, as we shift F1 to another season. Oh, I love it.
Oh,
I love it. See disgusting. What I did there? Yes, I do. And it was great. It would be great if you guys could revisit how you watch it all unfold and general viewing habits. Mm. Last I knew, Drew was into PlayStation View, and I'm not sure how Danny did his thing. even better to discuss is the huge wrinkle for us F1 fans in the States coming up next year as the coverage leaves NBCSN and heads to ESPN. There's a rumor that ESPN might even just rebroadcast the existing feed. What do you know about that other? What do you know about other feeds? What are we in for? Will we ever see our beloved Diffie, Hobbo, Matchett, and the backwards grid walking of Will Buxton again? We've grown quite attached to them and even created F1 bingo cards at our watch parties with many of those guys' catchphrases. Oh, man. I hope the center square is, it's time to bring the action.
is that what he says before every race or something?
That's Lee Diffie's equivalent of lights out and away we go.
Okay.
Which I learned from watching the Olympics, he also does for rowing.
All right.
So, there you go.
I mean, sure. Like, it applies.
Stay cool. See you next year. And thanks for Shift F1. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks. I think it's time I just pulled the veil back on how I watch F1 races.
Yeah?
Yeah, maybe.
How do you do it, Danny?
No, actually, let me rein it back. How there are many ways you can watch F1 races. If you are like me, if you grew up in Europe and were used to the big British castle, BBC's coverage of the events, then in the past there was only one way to do it. You would watch BBC, and if you moved abroad, you would have to find means to watch the BBC.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm not saying that everyone should go to, like, you know, Reddit streams or anything, but if you were so inclined to watch races on Sky, which is unavailable in these United States, unless ESPN, of course, were to take over that, then that would be one way one would go about doing that. And in the world, you know, in the ways in which the world works now with things like Soda Player, fortunately or unfortunately for F1, it becomes far easier to actually, or Ace Streams or any of these wonderful pieces of video streaming technology, you can get all kinds of things on there. I really like paying for my sport. It's like important to me. I have like Madden. I have my like NFL thing, so I can watch all the games after the fact. I did on MotoGP for a long time. I'm a UFC TV subscriber for going on probably 4 years at this stage. Judging by what I have seen on the internet during race times, there are a lot of people who just like to watch it via streaming services. So I think it's probably a good reason for Liberty and everyone to get an official one out there so that people can do it in a much more safe and legal manner. But the F1, they're asking about the ESPN might just rebroadcast the F1 feed from Sky. I wouldn't be half surprised. If they did so, they would be met with the dulcet tones of David Croft and Martin Brundle, who do the commentary. Brundle, an ex-F1 driver, of course. David Croft, I've met before, absolutely lovely guy. I'm not a massive fan of the pit team necessarily. I mean, Ted Kravitz does the pits, who's absolutely amazing. He also does Ted's Notebook. Actually, there was a tweet earlier in the week where somebody, I think, texted him the word cock while he was doing Ted's Notebook, and it popped up on the screen while he was showing his phone to someone. So that was pretty funny. But apart from that, Ted's Notebook's amazing. He just walks around each place and tells you what's going on and gives you an update on what's happening for the race. And then the sort of, the outer team of that, Simon Lazenby is the main host, who's, I think he's all right. He's half decent. Damon Hill is involved a bunch, who sort of, co-hosts, I guess. And so does Johnny Herbert, who's another, who drove in like the sort of the 90s era with Benetton and Stewart. So he's also involved in it. So I'm not a massive fan of that trio, but they do have Paul DiResto doing most races in the back, doing sort of analysis and stuff, and Anthony Davison, of course, as well. So they have a really strong team. There's a couple of other people, like Natalie Pinkman's involved, and Rachel Brooks, and a couple of other folks. The core team, I feel like, for the races themselves are really good. I'm just not necessarily a massive fan of the package team outside of that.
Yeah, you know, I have a soft spot, I think, for the NBCSN team. Mm. Will Buxton especially is he hustles, he gets it
right.
Done. But when I've seen the Sky broadcast, it's just another level. It's they're so much closer. They're at the tracks. The
right.
NBCSN guys are not. They're in Connecticut somewhere. And they just have the access. They're talking to the drivers. You know, they're all in this, you know, traveling road crew together.
Right.
So they have such a deeper understanding of the sport.
And they interview, like, you know, engineers mid-race or team principals mid-race.
Yeah,
you know?
They talk to Christian Horner all the time during a race.
Right. Martin Brundle does his pit walk, which is, you know, he walks down the pit lane and interviews people right before the national anthem kicks off, which is always fascinating because it's, you know, talking to racers, but also talking to, you know, celebrities who are there and stuff. And he's the type of guy who just, like, sticks his microphone in anywhere, you know?
Yeah, I doubt if ESPN was to rebroadcast the Sky feed, they would do anything but just the race.
Right.
But I would be very happy if they just did the Sky call. I can't imagine they would do it without commercials, though.
Right.
And I think part of what might be getting confused here is the term rebroadcast. I mean, Formula One, there is only one video broadcast.
Yes.
And it's decided on by Formula One itself. They have their own guy who switches the cameras, their own race director, and then everyone gets the same broadcast. So
you can see when it kicks in. It's the part at which the Formula One logo pops up with that sound. That's when the feed swaps over from everyone, from NBC Sports Network, Sky, the whole shebang. When the logo comes up, and then they do the basically the 3D sort of track walk thing where they show the different zones, that's when it kicks in. And that from then on, it's Formula One, whoever the media partner is who does that.
They've been doing it. Yeah, PlayStation View is the best option. I mean, this is all going to change because they only have one more race with PlayStation with NBC Sports Network. So there might be a way to do the ESPN stuff without PlayStation View. That's the not only the cheapest we actually have on F1.cool. I believe it's F1.cool/watch. What is it?
That would be a good URL.
FAQ? Yes. F1.cool/F1FAQ. I have a whole grid here. Of different ways to watch Formula One. I haven't updated this in a while, so the prices may be different. But again, this is all going to change with next year. ESPN's going to be rebroadcasting it in the US. And they were saying they were going to start a streaming thing, I thought for 2018.
Yeah,
so
I mean, we probably
that could change too.
Maybe we won't hear anything about it until... That sounds like a real, like, we'll hear about it in February kind of thing. Hopefully.
Yeah, but, you know, I would gladly, like you said, pay for this stuff. I pay for MotoGP.
Yeah.
I pay for supercars. You know, as long as it's, you know... I don't feel like I'm getting ripped off, which I do feel like when I'm watching NBC Sports Network and they go to commercial all the
right.
time.
Yeah.
And you're paying that's just that not just a good, yeah, it's not a good experience. So, I'd be happy to get around that with some money, but currently no way to do that. This one from Gustavo. This weekend, I went to my first ever Grand Prix and being a, wait, this weekend, meaning the Brazilian Grand Prix.
Oh my goodness.
Awesome. Being an F1 fan for over as long as I can remember, I loved everything about it. I went to Interlagos all days and stayed on the Laranjinha curve, the one where Hamilton crashed out in Q1.
Awesome.
The best part of it all is that I managed to get a lot of autographs and pictures with people such as Alain Prost, Jackie Stewart, Niki Lauda, Emerson Fittipaldi, and almost all the drivers in the current lineup. That's a lot. Fair play. This has been a great year for me in terms of F1, and it is mainly because of you guys. Aw, your podcast has made me love this sport even more than I did before. Lots of love from a Brazilian who's sad because he didn't get to see Drew when he came here. Aw, I'm sad I didn't get to see you, Gustavo.
It's fun. Awesome. We did a meetup in Amsterdam, like a NoClip meetup, which was a lot of fun. But it was very funny because we met in an area called Marie Heineken Plain, I believe it's called. It's like the back of a Heineken factory. It's like a square with a bunch of pubs and restaurants. And the only restaurant that could fit us, really, was the Irish restaurant, Irish pub. So we went to O'Donnell's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, yeah. That was fun. And then the fucking barmaid actually like went to school in my hometown. So
no way.
Small world, man. Fucking hell.
That's funny. This last one comes in from Eduardo. Florianópolis, Brazil. Hey, Drew and Danny and or Dave Lang. It's a good thing I've been emailing you for some time because saying the name of my hometown on a semi-regular basis may prove to be good practice for the future. I just came across an article about the future of the Brazilian Grand Prix, more specifically about what might happen after 2020 when the deal between the city of Sao Paulo and the Formula One management comes to an end. The likely privatization of Interlagos is making the promoters of the race consider more financially viable alternatives. And their first option is, shockingly, my own hometown of Florianópolis. It would consist of a street circuit with the architecture of downtown Florianópolis serving as the background. Assembling and disassembling the circuit would be expensive, and the lack of public investment could prove to be a problem. But there have been talks between Bernie Ecclestone and the former mayor of Florianopolis in 2014 about a possible race in 2016, which didn't come to fruition. And the promoters are now having similar conversations with Liberty Media and Florianopolis Tourism Board. However, having lived my entire life in Florianopolis, I'm not holding my breath. We are a much smaller city than Sao Paulo, about 500,000 people versus 11 million. Yes. And our roads aren't good enough for F1. Florianopolis is a very attractive destination for tourists since the city is pretty much a tropical paradise with over 40 different beaches.
Oh my
That's
God.
A lot of beaches. But if
Isn't
Liberty
it just
Media
one
finds,
big beach? If it's 40 different beaches, how close, how separated are these beaches? Sorry, continue.
You're right. Yeah, we got to talk to the beach police. But if Liberty Media finds out about the water and electricity shortages and endless traffic jams that occur when over a million Argentines come in over the summer to spend their vacations, they won't be very excited about bringing an event as big as Formula One race to my neck of the woods. So, as much as I would like to say, Floripa is the new Monaco until the prince...
to go away...
The more realistic outcome, I think, is that the Brazilian GP will continue to be at Interlagos. Related fact, Floripa has been home to a go-kart race 3 years in a row, with Schumacher, Massa, Fisichella, Alesi, Barrichello, and Luizzi among the featured drivers.
That's cool.
Sorry for, yet again, a very long email. Brazilians are prolix. Prolix?
You got me.
Don't know what that is. Thanks, prolix. And Neum.
Tediously lengthy, according to dictionary.com.
Oh, okay.
There you go. I didn't think that was tedious or lengthy. Thank you so much. That's interesting. Yeah, the Brazilian Grand Prix has not always been in Interlagos. It was Yacarapagua. I can never say it. For a little while there in the 70s, which is in Rio de Janeiro. So it has moved before. But I like Interlagos. It's a fun circuit.
Yeah.
A street circuit would be all right, I guess. We are missing one ever since Valencia dropped off the calendar. But yeah, I guess... I could, yeah, I don't know. I do like when they mix the tracks a little bit, but it'll be sad to see Interlagos go in the same way it would be sad to see Monza go, you know?
Yeah. Also, I forgot to mention Joe and Sarah Pop also included an attachment. It is an MP3 of Dave Lang doing the Dukes of Hazzard General Lee's horn.
Yeah.
In case anyone wants that for a ringtone.
It's solid ringtone.
I'll put that in the show notes. Oh, boy. That's it for emails, Danny. Again, you can hit us up at f1.cool/emails. We are also on Twitter. Follow at Shift F1 Podcast for show updates and any fun F1 stuff we run across. I am at Drew Scanlon.
I'm at Danny O'Dwyer.
Shout-outs this week go to Frytup, who linked us to a PC Gamer story about a race car driver named Mike. I think I'm going with Bouchel.
Schumacher.
he was racing in... He currently races for Renault Clio, but he had a near-death experience as a result of a complication with pneumonia and spent a lot of time in the hospital recuperating, and as a result decided to take up game programming.
Wow.
As he was recuperating, and has a Kickstarter for a game called Arena 3D, which looks like it's basically... Geometry Wars 4.
Okay.
It seems.
Arena 3D. I think I played that. Isn't that one of the Quakes?
Yeah, it's kind of a generic name. There's a store page for it on Steam with a demo showcasing three of the modes. It's pretty looking.
Wow.
So, that's cool.
Check it out.
Thanks. I'll link that as well. Thanks, Frytub. And then Jan McKeeky, a.k.a. Grabuni on Twitter, sends this message, Stoffel Waffle is irresistible, and then a link to a picture of Fernando Alonso planting a kiss on the cheek of Stoffel Van Dorn.
Aw. Beautiful. It's Stoffel adorable. Waffle. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's I was eating a lot of Stroop waffles in
in
Amsterdam. Yeah.
Oh,
it may be the most delicious food in the world.
You might be right.
Stroop waffles are really something else. I mean, waffles are delicious on their own, but to have them like embedded, like infused with syrup, it's just upsettingly delicious.
It really is. Oh, as always, you can find our show notes on F1.cool, along with how to subscribe via RSS, iTunes, Google Play, and wherever podcasts are sold, and how to watch the, I guess, last race of F1 in the United States, if you need a nice color-coded grid for that. Until next time, I am Drew Scanlon. That's Danny O'Dwyer. If you'd like to support us, we are both on Patreon. Danny at patreon.com/DannyO'Dwyer. Me at patreon.com/clothmap. Anything else, Danny?
No. We're both very busy working on our day jobs, I know, with Patreon.
Yes.
You're editing three videos or four videos about Brazil, and I'm editing three videos about video games. So there's a lot of shit landing November and December. But looking forward to the final race of the year. Next week, we get to talk about Abu Dhabi. I think Yas Marina is a really cool circuit. I think sunsetting F1 with that final race into the sunset is always a lovely time. So if you missed the last couple of races for any reason and you've been enjoying this this fun season we've had, then you know, carve out some time in the early mornings on Sunday and check it out, because it's always a really special event. And I always like watching it here actually quite a lot, because you kind of get to enjoy the end of a day and then it's only the morning where you are, so it's always a nice race to watch.
There you go. Looking forward to it. Yeah. Have a good race weekend, everyone. We will see you all next week.
Yeah.